and looking at the letter of Paul, his first letter to the church at Corinth, and the message of God to a big city, because Corinth was the big city of its day. So what is the message to the big city of Corinth got to say to the big city of Sheffield? Well, let me take you to my real English home. It's a very odd thing for an Irishman to say he's got a home in England, but if I had to pick it, it's a wee place called Shirley Wood in Hertfordshire, where I knew there were some people from there, where I spent 7 years as a youth minister of this amazing church, which should appear on the screen, at Christ Church Shirley Wood. Now, I want you to picture the scene. It's the year 2000, just like the pulp song says, it's the year 2000, and that this very well-to-do, well-heeled, posh suburb of northwest London, where people speak awfully politely, have recruited a crazy Belfast boy to be their next youth minister. So what the jungle drums go out that this crazy early 20-something-year-old Irish boy, we really only understand every third word, he's going to be the new youth worker. So picture the scene. It's my first Sunday. The church is packed with all these middle-class English parents coming to see who this idiot the church have hired to look after their kids. Now, you only ever get one chance to make a first impression. So I want you to picture the scene. It's Christ Church, Chorley Wood, Sunday evening. It's packed. Lots of parents. Who's the new youth leader of the church? And I get up, and these are the first words that come out of my mouth. Ladies and gentlemen, hello. I want to begin by telling you that I've been a Christian for 15 years, and I've decided tonight I don't want to be a Christian anymore. That wasn't the reaction. The reaction, if you can imagine 300 people simultaneously going, this sort of audible intake of air around the place. The vicar, all colour drained from his face, as he turned to the church warden and goes, you did take up his references, didn't you? I said, ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you why I don't want to be a Christian anymore. Because I have racked my Bible. I have racked the Gospels. And I cannot find a single reference to the word Christian in the story of Jesus. I can never find it. It doesn't appear anywhere in the New Testament. What Jesus called people to be was disciples. And Christians, it strikes me, some of you are here are Christians tonight. You come to church once a week, and you go out the door, and what you've heard makes not a blind bit of difference to how you live your life next week. You stick a few quid in the collection plate, but to all intents and purposes, your life is no different when you leave than when you arrived. That's what a Christian is, ladies and gentlemen. And I don't want to be one anymore. A disciple is somebody who leaves everything they have to choose to follow Jesus, who wants to learn from Jesus, to follow Jesus, to be like Jesus, to serve like Jesus, to love like Jesus, to be radical like Jesus. So if you want a youth leader to raise up more Christians in this church, you've got the wrong bloke. I've come here to make disciples. And this palpable look of relief went around the congregation. But it's true. We're called to be disciples. And tonight's title that I've been given is to be radical disciples. Radical disciples. What on earth does that mean? At the beginning of Matthew's gospel, in chapter 4, Matthew records, as Jesus was walking beside the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon called Peter and his brother Andrew. They were casting a net into the lake, for they were fishermen. Come, follow me, Jesus said, and I will send you out to fish for people. At once they left their nets and followed him. A disciple is someone who wants to follow Jesus. A disciple is someone who wants to learn like Jesus. A disciple is someone who wants to be like Jesus. And for the next 3 years of their life, they followed him. They spent time with him. They journeyed with him. They ate with him. They were with him when he healed the sick and raised the dead and gave the blind his sight back. They felt the emotion. They felt the excitement. They felt the inspiration. And then Jesus sent them out to do the very thing he tells them here. He sent them out two by two to go and be fishers of people. I used to have a dream as a little boy that I was on the shore of Galilee and Jesus is over here and he's calling his disciples one after the other. And he goes, hey, you, come follow me. I go, yes. He goes, no, the guy beside you, please. And deep down inside, I think loads of us think like that, that somehow God could have picked somebody better than me. That God really meant the person next to me. That I'm not that gifted or I'm not that bright. I make a lot of mistakes. I'm not very consistent. And Jesus says, no, come follow me. Join me in my mission to change the world, and I will make you a fisher of people. I've chosen you, he says. I've called you. I've poured my extravagant, reckless love over you. I've filled you with my spirit. Now go be fishers of people. And that first call to the first disciples is our call in this generation, to be fishers of people. And that's central to our theme tonight. This term we're looking at, community, the message for the big city church. So what does Paul want to say to you and me tonight through his letter, his first letter to the church at Corinth? Paul writes, though I am free and belong to no one, I have made myself a slave to everyone to win as many as possible. To the Jews, I became like a Jew to win the Jews. To those under the law, I became like one under the law, though myself I am not under the law, so as to win those under the law. Bear with me, I know it's hard, but keep going, okay? To those not having the law, I became like one not having the law, though I am not free from God's law, but I'm under Christ's law. I will explain all of this. So to win those not having the law. To the weak, I became weak to win the weak. I have become all things to all people, so that by all possible means I might save some. I do all this for the sake of the gospel, that I may share in its blessings. Do you not know that in a race, all the runners run, but only one gets the prize? Run in such a way so as to get the prize. For everyone who competes in the games goes into strict training. They do it to get a crown that will not last, but we do it to get a crown that will last forever. Therefore, I do not run like one running aimlessly. I do not fight like a boxer beating the air. No, I strike blow to my body and make it my slave. So after I have preached to others, I myself will not be disqualified for the prize. Fairly straightforward reading, isn't it? Around the time that St. Paul wrote this to Corinth, or in the Greek, Corinthos, one of the leading thinkers of that era was a man called Cicero, who appears on the next slide. There he is. Cicero was a leading thinker of Roman culture. He was a philosopher, he was a lawyer, and he was a politician. And at the heart of Cicero's passion was that Cicero believed that Rome was free. And so Cicero believed that when the Roman Empire went gallivanting around, overtaking countries and stealing and plundering and taking hold of cities, that actually they were doing those people a favor, because they were bringing the freedom of Rome. Although how you can say it's freedom after you've ransacked the place. Anyway, but Rome existed on this principle of freedom. In fact, actually, back in the day, if you stuck the letters CR, Citinus Romanus, to your arm, you could walk the world without fear of being attacked. Because if you were attacked, the Roman Empire would bring everything down on the person who attacked you, because Romans were free. So when Paul talks about freedom, he is speaking it into a culture who think they know what freedom is. Because Cicero told them, it's to be free, it's to be a Citizen Romanus. And Paul says, no. Freedom is bigger than political freedom. It's much bigger. It's the freedom from sin. It's the freedom from your past. It's the freedom from bondage and chains. It's the freedom from anything we've done wrong. It's the freedom to be who God has made us to be. So Paul begins these words with the words, I am free. And he's speaking it to a city who think they know what freedom is. It's to do whatever they like. And you only have to look at Roman history, and they did whatever they liked. They did whatever they liked in terms of warfare and military power. They did what they liked in terms of ethics and sexual ethics. Whatever it was, they did what they liked. That's what they thought freedom was. So this big theme of this letter is this word, freedom. And Paul is passionate to tell the Romans and the Corinthians that freedom in God's economy is not the freedom of Cicero. Because we are free to do what we like. But if you eat junk food all day, and you're free to eat junk food all day, it will kill you. And you're not much free then, are you? You're free to drink as much as you like, but drink as much as you like, and you will be completely and utterly dead within 5 years if you drink. And you're free to drive a car at 100 miles an hour, but what impact does that have on other people? Paul is saying with all his heart, freedom damages. So use freedom wisely. Because abused freedom harms us. It harms us. And that's what he's saying here. Abused freedom harms us. So what he goes on to say is, to see your body and your life as an athlete sees theirs. You know that passage? He uses a lot of running imagery, St. Paul. He loves the race image. And what Paul is telling us here is that an athlete uses their freedom to train their body better. They don't drink all the time. They don't eat McDonald's all the time. They use it wisely. Over the last year, I've become friends with a guy on Twitter who has just blown me away. He's from Northern Ireland, obviously a great bloke, and he's from the same little town that I come from. And his name is Joel. And Joel is an athlete, and Joel is a rower. And he has invested his life in rowing. He trains. He trains incessantly. Joel won the Irish Championships, gold medal. Joel won the European Champions, gold medal. And last year, Joel won the World Champions, gold medal. And he's now training for the Olympics, and I hope in 3 years' time it will be a gold medal there too. So I tweeted Joel on Friday and told him I was speaking to a bunch of young people in Sheffield on Sunday about an athlete training and how freedom to do what you like and training weren't always in balance. And he wrote back to me and said this: on this team, we fight for every inch. We know that when we add up every inch, that's what will make the difference between losing and winning, between living and dying. Me and my crew were nobodies. We had won nothing. We were fighting for an Irish Championship title. We won silver that year, gold the following year, then it was gold at the Europeans, and then the world. You see what I mean? Freedom is given to us as a gift, but it will abuse us unless we choose how to use it wildly. So use it wisely to make us better. So the question I guess I want to ask tonight is this: where do we need to make changes to our lives to perhaps start doing something or stop doing something? How do we use our freedom to be the very best version of ourselves? How do we do that? What is God calling us to start doing or stop doing to be the very best version of ourselves? It's a hard question, isn't it? Because one of the things about being a speaker is, as I stand here, I want you to know I have not got this all together. So I'm asking myself this question: where do I need to make changes in my life? Where do I need to pick something up or set something down to be the very best version of me, to help God use me more to change the world around? Which brings us to the heart of this passage, that very complicated bit at the start. Freedom means we can choose to draw alongside people. So St. Paul is arguing that freedom is not to do what you like, but it's freedom to do the right thing, the best thing, to be the best version of you. So St. Paul says, I have become a slave. I have chosen to limit my freedom so that other people will know about Jesus. And this is the critical part of this passage. And he says, to reach Jewish people, I've almost become as a Jew. To reach those who are under the law, I've become under the law. To reach those beyond the law, I've become beyond the law. And to reach those who are weak, I've become weak. What on earth does he mean by all of this? Well, he begins by saying he became as a Jew to win the Jews. Now, of course, Paul was Jewish. But he had a Damascus Road moment, blinding light, conversion. So what we can read from this passage and from these words is that St. Paul has gone back to the synagogue. He's gone back to the synagogue and to the acts of worship and to the routines and the traditions of the Jewish faith. He's done that so that when he's in that context, in that synagogue, he can whisper to people about Jesus. Are you with me? So he's curtailed his freedom, gone back into the synagogue, went through all the rules and regulations of Judaism so he could whisper in the ears of those around him, this isn't really the way. Let me tell you about Jesus. And we know he did this because a few chapters later in the next letter, we read these words. I have worked much harder, been in prison more frequently, been flogged more severely, being exposed to death again and again, and five times I received from the Jews the 40 lashes minus one. So the synagogue were beating him because they knew he was sowing the gospel in the synagogue. That's nothing short of inspirational, isn't it? He puts himself through all of that so that the Jewish people he's surrounded with, who he loves, for whom it was his culture, can know the true freedom that isn't from Cicero, but comes from Jesus Christ. Paul gave up so much to journey alongside people to whisper Jesus into their ear. But what is important, you read in the passage, well, he says, I didn't become as one, all that stuff, right? Is he didn't cease to be a follower of Jesus. He didn't compromise his faith. He kept his same radical, authentic integrity as a Christian disciple. But he birthed himself, he incarnated himself into different cultures to whisper Jesus to those around him. It was St. Teresa of Avila who said that God has no eyes to see other people's pain than yours, no hands to touch other people than yours, no feet to walk to the broken but yours. This passage is about saying to God, yes, you've given me freedom, but I'm choosing to give it back, and I'm going to let you use my hands and my voice and my eyes and my heart and my hands and my feet to walk to wherever you sent me to whisper Jesus into the ears of those people. It might help you if we read the same passage in the Message. I think this helps you just nail this. Even though I am free of the demands and expectations of everyone, I have voluntarily become a servant to any and all in order to reach a wide range of people. Religious, non-religious, meticulous, moralists, loose-living, immoralists, the defeated, the demoralized, whoever. I didn't take on their way of life. I kept my bearings in Christ, but entered their world and tried to experience things from their point of view. I've become just about every sort of servant there is in my attempts to lead those I meet back into a God-saved life. I did this because of the message. I didn't just want to talk about it. I wanted to be in on it. So the question is for us, which subcultures, in Paul's day, it was the Jews, it was under the law, over the law, the weak, what subcultures are we in that God wants to equip us to whisper Jesus to those around us? I'm going to tell you about two people who blow me away, who do just this, who have brought Jesus into their subcultures, and they've not lost a hint of their edge, their faith, or their integrity. Let me tell you about my friend Nick Russell, who is no relation, who is a Church Army evangelist in southeast London. Nick works on three of the most difficult council estates in the United Kingdom. Massive deprivation, huge social problems, gun crime, knife crime, drugs, prostitution, young people facing very bleak futures. And if you were in my job as the chief executive of a mission organization and you were trying to place a person into that context, I guarantee you, you wouldn't place Nick. Nick is 62. He's a linguist, professional linguist, speaks six languages, including Russian and Serbo-Croat. Fairly bright bloke, okay? He now works in these tough estates, and he's been there for 15 years, drawing alongside some of those marginalized people in this country. And he's birthed his family into that estate. His kids, his wife, they live there. Like the amazing people who do the Meaden projects up in Fairvale and Pisgah. They live in the middle of the community. And he told me one night about a guy who was cross with him, and he started to urinate through his letterbox. I said, Nick, how did you handle that? He goes, it's very easy, my dear boy. He goes, what? He goes, I just turned the bristles on the letterbox the other way around. He said, he didn't do it again. Yeah, I'll let you think about that. But I opened the Evening Standard last year, and this is the quote in the Evening Standard, the London Evening Standard, about my friend's work. This might look like a regular bunch of kids shooting pool and pushing weights at a youth club, but the youngsters attending Super Kids are anything but. Grant, 27, became a criminal at 12 to put food on the table and has spent a third of his life in jail. Charlie, 19, was arrested for his first theft, age 10, and Kelsey, 21, was thrown out of school and was charged with burglary when she was 16. And Ben has suffered post-traumatic stress after coming home to find his mum dead on the street outside his house, run over by a bus. The dysfunction and distress of the 25 people who regularly attend the community hall of the Middle Park Estate in Eltham would be enough to permanently occupy a team of social workers and probation officers, but in reality, they depend on one single man. Nick, 62, a softly spoken, grey-haired linguist from Cambridge and a married father of two, is an unlikely saviour. As these kids will tell you on our estates, Nick is a legend and a total hero. That's the London Evening Standard. Nick, to paraphrase St. Paul, I became one on a council estate, so I might win those on a council. Are you with me? And let me tell you about Sarah. It isn't her real name, I've changed it. Sarah lives in Northern Ireland, and she felt that there was one community in Northern Ireland who felt they didn't experience a lot of love, a lot of joy, and a lot of hope coming from the church. It was the LGBT community. That often they felt intolerance and anger from Christians. So she felt a deep call from God to go into the gay clubs and gay bars of Belfast to draw alongside people and show them that Jesus loved them. So I was home last year, and she said, will you come with me and see what I do? I said, sure, of course I will. As we're walking out of the car, she opened the boot and took a guitar with her. I thought, what on earth is she doing? And we went into this very busy gay bar in Belfast with her holding a guitar. And to my astonishment, I discovered it was a talent night. Suddenly, I realized what she had and what she was planning to do. She was shaking like a leaf. She said, Mark, will you pray for me, please? I said, yeah, of course. The picture of the scene, it's a busy bar. It's in Belfast. It's packed. And it's being compared by a very tall 6'4" drag queen with a pink dress and blue hair. Marge Simpson-esque hair, okay? And one after the other, people got up there and did an act, and then this drag queen would rip them to shreds, and everyone would laugh. Picture the lions and Christians being thrown to, and you've got an image of what this bar was like. When suddenly it was Sarah's turn, I'm going, oh my word, this is going to be a car crash. What's going to happen? And this will stay with me the rest of my life. She got up onto a bar stool in the middle of this bar and took out her guitar. The place was noisy. Nobody was paying a blind bit of notice. At the top of her voice, she began to sing. You unravel me with a melody. You surround me, a song of deliverance from my enemies, till all my fears are gone. Anyone know this song? I'm no longer a slave to fear. I am a child of God. I suddenly became aware nobody was talking. You could have heard a pin drop in that bar. Sarah sang even louder. From my mother's womb, you have chosen me. Love has called my name. I've been born again to a family, and your blood flows through my veins. Because I'm no longer a slave to fear. I am a child of God. I looked around me. Nobody was laughing. There were tears in people's eyes. People started to hug each other. Because you've got to remember that most Northern Irish kids have grown up in some sort of faith background. And all of them had turned their back on it. And here in this bar was this wee girl from Belfast singing this worship song over them. She finished, and the place went mad. They cheered, they wolf whistled, they asked her to sing. She sang it again. And then at the end, she goes, you see that bloke standing over there? I thought, uh-oh. She goes, that's my mate Mark, and he's an evangelist, and he's a minister. And if you would like him to pray God's blessing on you tonight, just go and ask him. I tell you in the word of a lie, if I prayed with 50 people, that's an understatement. For there in that Belfast bar, I saw something beautiful. And do you know the reason I've not told you her name? is because of the hate stuff she gets on Twitter and social media because she does this work. And I told her to point them to this chapter of 1 Corinthians. Because my friend gave up her freedom and risked the rancor of others to paraphrase St. Paul, to be as one in a gay bar, to win those in a gay bar. Friends, this is massive for us. How do we enter the world of those around us but not lose our faith and our edge and our integrity and our passion? How do we do that and at the same time know we might be ridiculed like Sarah has been? But to do so in a way that is not being conformed to the standard of this world but transformed by the renewing of our mind, to being salt that doesn't lose its saltiness. What does St. Paul tell us? I became a Jew like a Jew to win the Jews. I became as one under the law to win those under the law. I became as one without the law to reach those without the law. I became as one living on a tough London estate to win those living on a tough London estate. And I became as one in a gay bar in Belfast to win those in a gay bar in Belfast. St. Paul concludes, I have become all things to all people, so that by all possible means I might save some. I do it for the sake of the gospel, that I might share in its blessing. Friends, as I finish, how do we bring our faith, our edge, our passion? How do we expose the radical, reckless, extravagant love that Luke talked about earlier to the office, the school, the lecture hall, corporation, or Pop-Tart? See, I'm trendy enough to even know what those are. Into the pub or into the gym, into the football club, or into the theatre? How do we share Jesus in those subcultures? How do we become as one in corporation or Pop-Tarts to win those in corporation or Pop-Tarts? Because friends, when we follow St. Paul's example, when we enter into the world of others, when we share Jesus with them, it's edgy, we are filled with the Spirit, but God is with us. Because that's what it means to take risks for the gospel. That's what it means to see miracles happen. That's what it means to see lives transformed, because that's what it means for history to be written, the kingdom of God to come in. And that, my friends, is what I think this passage means by radical discipleship. As I've prayed for you tonight and prayed for this service tonight and thought about what I was going to have to say, it's a hard message. And I realize there are not many gags and jokes as I normally would have in a sermon, but it's a really hard challenge to us tonight. How do we be in those places that God's calling us to be, to bring his news and his gospel and his love and his joy to those who would never step inside a building like this? As I look out over this church tonight, every one of you has a complex series of networks that is completely unique to you. Nobody else has that little set of networks that you have. And where is God calling you to be the evangelist to that network? So I want you just to ask the Lord that question right now, really. Where, Lord, are you calling me to be an evangelist in my networks? To whisper Jesus, like St. Paul did in the synagogue, into those around you. Because if we pray that prayer and we ask the Lord to lead us in that way, he will. So what we have to ask him for is for an overflowing of his Spirit, for the full armor of God to protect us, and for wisdom to know what to say and not to say. And if you're anything like me, that's a terrifying prospect, but it's also an exciting one.